Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today I'm going to go a little, I'm going to get a little out there for you. But I think this will potentially change the way you view reality a little bit more. Now, a long time ago, I did an episode called Consensus Reality, which was the theory that we are all agreeing on reality, and that's therefore it is what it is. And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean the earth, you, me, what we look like, what's possible, what's not possible, all that stuff. And friends of mine in the recent days, weeks, you know, we talk about there's an awakening going on, and that means multiple things in society today. One of them is the political red pill that everyone keeps talking about. And then there's a bigger one that a lot of other people are talking about, which is that we are sort of having the age of Aquarius, right? For lack of a better reference. This is a moment when we're waking up to a huge, huge shift in our consciousness, which allows us to understand the universe and ourselves in it. If consensus reality was, say, like a 101 course from college, this is going to be the 201 course. So now you understand the first part, and now we're going to go into the second level. Only difference being, this is my hunch, this is my theory. Brontosauruses are thin in one end, thick at another, and thin at the other end. That's my theory. I was going to clear my throat, but I don't want to do it. So what I'm hearing from my friends is that they're realizing that there's law of attraction. And, you know, I think it is absolutely 100% real. I have friends of mine living in California now who are from different states internally to the United States. And they are realizing that wherever they go in this town of Huntington Beach, they are finding effortlessly people from their hometown, multiple people from the same high school. And this is not it's by a big city, but the high school is like almost as intense as me finding someone from my hometown in this place, which I never have. This friend of mine is telling me about meeting all these people from her home state of Ohio. And now because it's been like 6 months, and now I'm finding that wherever I go, some dude shouting about being from Cleveland or Cincinnati or something. And I'm like, I'm not getting this from any other state. I'm just getting it from her state because she's telling me that she's running into this and it's infecting me. And I think it's amazing and wonderful. And so it's happening. This is the 2nd of January right now. On New Year's Eve, I'm hanging out with some friends. And the conversation starts without me saying anything about the law of attraction, about connections, about how just knowing one person and knowing how they're remotely connected to a project that would be really cool to get into, and then switching restaurants, switching days, switching whole crowds of people, they end up bumping into people that are connected to all those things, and stuff goes down, business gets signed, and it's just amazing. And that this has been happening more and more, that they realize that this is the way things happen. Meaning they're learning about this law of attraction inadvertently without a name, and it's just starting to take effect. And what's funny is these individuals know very well the theory of law of attraction, but in articulating for 10 minutes or so about these cascading moments that have happened throughout 2020, there's no mention of law of attraction. And if I say, oh, well, you're talking about law of attraction, like, oh, yeah, it's funny. It's just interesting. Again, if you don't have words for things, then you can't conceive things. And if you can't conceive things, these things can't be controlled at a minimum and sometimes can't happen at all. So I want to say this correctly as not to sound, you know, snobbish or arrogant or whatever, because I know that there's plenty of you out there that have the same exact experience that I have routinely. And it is special, of course, that when it happens, but it doesn't necessarily make us special when it happens. It's just something that you've tuned yourself to. You are a microphone that can pick up a frequency range. And the more that you become enlightened, aka seeing more, your radio picks up more frequencies and therefore more avenues of information, diagnostics, connections all occur for you. Your brain is a muscle that I believe the more you exercise it, the more what you're doing is you're mapping more potentially physical neurons together, which are sort of like the memory in a computer. Remember, memory in a computer only holds what's loaded into it when your computer's powered on. When you power your computer off, memory is typically either random or cleared. So you load up your computer. It takes stuff from the hard disk, whether it's an SSD or not, it's irrelevant. It moves into temporary memory in the CPU, and it starts executing instructions. You don't want anyone to shut your computer off because you know you're going to lose everything that's in there. And that's the memory in your computer. A lot of old farts will reference hard drives as memory. Whatever. So I think that our brain is simply memory containers for perhaps what's going on any one moment. And it's freely interchanged, just like a computer, with the hard drive, which is your soul, that has access to the great mother cloud that is the universe and perhaps God, him or herself. I don't think I'm mentioning God as a her to appease any SJWs. I seriously have thought God was probably a female at best because she gives birth. Doesn't just create things. But it's probably a combination of both anyway. So I take this recent experience home. I guess for me, technically, it was last night. And part of it occurred to me right when they were talking, and then I finally mulched it a little bit later. Because there was a little note in the example that I heard, which was that this was happening to a friend of mine who's a business owner, but she also has her employees. And this particular moment, one of her employees is living with her because she hasn't found a place in this area. And so both of them are going out and compounding this law of attraction. Both of them know about all the circumstances that would be great if they met these people and got these projects. And it seems to become increasingly easier when the two of them venture out into the world. So I started thinking, and I started getting some sort of chronological version of this theory, because I want to share with you this technique that I've learned, which is that sometimes we contemplate something and we don't move it over time, meaning take into account how this particular, let's just say, fact about something is true today, but if you apply time to it, it evolves and becomes much more explainable. And it also evolves from perhaps either less of that experience occurring to more experience of that occurring, or perhaps more of it occurring and less occurring today, or what is occurring stays steady, but its impact varies. And this will all make sense to you in just a second here. So it's hard for us to contemplate consensus reality simply because, and this is funny, because man is so arrogant that man, you know, knows how the universe started, went to the moon, blah, blah, blah. Every time we need a little shot in the arm, based on our, I guess, genetic insecurities, we're willing to write blank checks left and right. But let me ask you, when I say we are conceiving of the shape of the earth, let's just say, and let's say further back, we conceived as the earth as a flat surface, and therefore it was. Due to our inability to travel like Magellan or like Christopher Columbus or what have you, we were not capable of personally confirming such a thing, nor would we want to, because our ship's going off the edge of the earth and we're, I guess, yelling back, it's flat, you know, we got it right, and we're dying, right? Nobody wants that eventuality when it comes to exploring whether it's flat or round. Even today, if you could go to the South Pole and you're a flat earther today and you're like, hey, I think I'm going to find the dome edge, But if in doing so, for some reason, you were going to potentially die and you didn't have an internet connection to at least call back on Facebook Live and say, look, I'm here, donk, 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 now I'm going to die. But at least I was the first person to really confirm this to you. If you couldn't do that, you probably wouldn't do that. You'd be like, well, let's think of another plan. I don't want to be the only guy on earth who dies. And then my body's, you know, whatever, rotting out there, harvested by the government to throw me away or whatever. You wouldn't do it. So I think that when we get to these bigger concepts like consensus reality, we shy back. We also don't want the world to be as dynamic as this theory suggests. Because what am I suggesting? What I'm suggesting, as long as an entity of media, be it television, film, internet news, magazines, and just papers and conversation, because what happens today in today's society? Once something becomes popular, you are told who to hate, who to love, who's a hero, who's not a hero, and thus they would have total control to shape the world like a 12-sided tetrahedron, right? Okay. We don't want that. Yeah, we don't want someone to infect us with some evil, et cetera, turning the world into even a worse place than it already is, right? I think the world's a great place, but, you know, there's some bad factions out there. We don't want it to gain them any more traction than they already have. And this goes down to the esoteric of someone telling you something you don't want to hear, but since you heard it, you manifest it. You mean there's kids eating kids? I mean, adults eating kids and politicians eating, drinking adrenal chromes and all that kind of stuff? Once we start hearing these things and focusing on it to, quote unquote, get rid of them, what if that forges more paths for them to do what they do? Maybe. I mean, it's not something we want to think about, but it could be. Here's what this episode's about. This episode is about an advancement to the theory. Now, when you think about consensus reality, what I was saying was that we consent that the world's a particular way, but you might say, no, everyone totally disagrees, man. You got atheists and Christians. You got left and right everywhere, yin and yang everywhere. On any one concept, there's an anti-concept. So how on earth would this work? It doesn't seem like it makes any sense. Okay, well, this is where I'm going to take the pie slice. I shouldn't even say that. The layer cake. The cake that's not a layer cake is going to become a layer cake. We're going to cut it in half. So it's the bottom half of the cake and the top half of the cake. Top half is what we're going to call consciousness. That which you can discern and recall in your memory, in your brain. Now, we know how this works. If we sat in a smoke lounge with 10 guys and we start talking about whether or not Christ ever existed, whether or not I went to the moon, whether or not JFK was, there's going to be someone in the room that's going to differ from someone else. So let's quarantine that type of communication. But, and I know some of you believe this is more of a theory than reality, but there's the Freudian subconscious. Subconscious is always referred to as, you know, usually the id or the child within you. It is a lot more delicate. It gets afraid. It doesn't really know what's going on necessarily outside of its central core, inside your, I guess, brain, mind, which is obviously a marriage of your body and your soul. But let's just say that it's the subconscious acceptance, meaning it has to filter through the consciousness to be really stored in that pantry of ours that I always refer to, that has a pile of true things, a pile of fake things or false things, and a big pile of maybe in the middle, probably with maybe being a lot bigger than either one of the other piles. We propose to you this. What if the subconscious of man freely exchanges ideas? What if it is truly the subconscious of man that is forging this reality, not the consciousness? The consciousness is your gift to have an identity. The subconscious is more, again, fundamental. Not necessarily feral, but definitely a lot more susceptible to change and having acute spikes in frequency based on change. But maybe there's two layers to your subconscious. you have the consciousness, which is sort of the big brother freaking out the little brother, and you can create weird state changes where subconsciously you have like PTSD. You have the event that's lost inside your mind, and your subconscious is still suffering from the event, but your consciousness, for whatever reason, due to the shock and the trauma of the event, has either pushed it out because it was severe abuse, or it was an IED bomb that blew up and literally physically shocked your mind, your brain inside your skull, for being able to function properly. Thus, just like they say, when you get on the back of the head, you can lose up to 10 minutes of your short-term memory, and you wake up and you don't remember what happened. And someone else has to reconstruct it for you. Oh, okay. And then every bit of pain, anxiety you feel, you can link it back to a well-described event. And it's our soldiers, mainly in this world, all countries, of course, that experience these horrific things, and no one was there. Either everyone else died and they were the only one that survived, creating survival guilt and that sort of thing, or everyone lost 10 minutes. Or someone just didn't see what happened to you. And so this thing happens and it manifests. But there could be a deeper level inside of our mind that is the more survival track, the more instinctual track, the one that you built as a baby so that you could start interacting with this world, lest you die of starvation or what have you. Or at a minimum, you don't really communicate with your parents that well, you know, which is super important. Imagine it is this deep basement of our subconscious that is not associated with reactionary emotions, but is merely the bedrock that you built as a child. It could be even a reality that's handed to you partially from genetics. Who knows? Or it could be even predisposition due to genetics, right? We know that musical families tend to remain musical. They pick up an instrument and they do extremely well because their neural net was configured to be really intuitive with processing that data going through. It's sort of like a graphics user processor. It's sort of like a graphical processor unit, GPU, in your computer that runs the video card, being engineered to process triangles or quads for 3D games. So it's designed to do that sort of math super fast, whereas your CPU, it could do the math pretty good, but it's more of a brute force, not really designed to do that because it's doing all kinds of other math. I'm related to video processing of 3D stuff. For you computer geeks, you will totally get that. So now, with our new advanced 201 theory, let's take it over time. You might think that this technique might create a more chaotic present time because we have a lot more people on Earth than we had in the past. That's just a mathematical certainty. I'm going to suggest the exact opposite. We are more locked into this reality right now because there's so much force being applied to the current theory because there is so much solidification of the concepts that we have adopted because it's constantly being reinforced, almost like a network, like a neural network or an internet network. You know, no one worries about one internet hub going down. You can still use the internet. It's just going to be a little slower because it's going to wiggle past wherever the problem is. That's the beauty of the internet and why it was designed the way it was designed. But now imagine this. Isn't it interesting? And it's almost every single one of every OG listener, I guarantee you've had this thought a million times without exaggeration. You've noticed that over the chronicles of time, as either accurately or inaccurately documented, man further back was far more spiritual. God always showed up and did things. Not necessarily the God of Christianity, but every God, every Anunnaki God, every Egyptian God, Native American God, South American God, African God, etc. As time progressed, we lost that. And now we're sort of going into transhumanism. We are trying to approach mechanical solutions to the human body and the human psyche. There's, if you study Shadowrun role-playing game, they're back in the 80s, they completely conceptualized putting new nervous systems in your body to replace your nervous system so you could draw a gun faster. You could put hard drives in your head because we didn't have SSD at the time. They really thought out this whole process. We're losing God of the spiritual nature, and we're gaining a God of faux science and transhumanism of all types. There's people like Bill Gates that think they have the right to genetically alter you. Now, I think that most of us assume it is simply because man has discovered more about the universe that we became more technical, and thus the replacement of the unknown for the quote-unquote known is how we have developed over time. But if everything is a matrix created by this conscious, this consensus reality thing, through this deep id subconscious mechanism, then that is just an evolution of the game. We invented excuses of why things are the way they are, instead of endorsing and embracing the unknown as a gift of your dreams. You ever go in your dreams and start going, okay, wait a minute, stop everybody. What's this building doing here? What? Who are you? I don't know any of you people. Why do I feel like I know you? Why did I just have sex with you? Da, 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 right? You don't do that. You cruise through a dream like, oh yeah, man. And you'll leave a room with like a certain configuration of furniture and people. And you step outside and you look at the landscape. And that's cool. And you go back inside and the room's a little bit different. Hey man, you're losing no comfort over that change. And that is why I think dreams are the playground of real consciousness. But here, you'd have a cow if your room changed just because you went in and out of it. And no matter where you went, everything changed constantly. It's generally the same purpose, but it's like, oh my God, I was married to you 2 seconds ago and now I'm married to you, you know? I debate on how far back to go in this concept, but I think I'm going to go back way beyond the form of man. We're going to jump around and we're going to use Genesis here in a second. But let's say that we are these soul beings and we are living in a more emotional state of being in the universe and not one of any tangible matter. We are happy most of the time because how could you be unhappy? We don't die. There's no lack of life. And we can go anywhere in the universe. It's sort of like a whale swimming in a deep ocean. Go anywhere you want. Do anything you want. Meet new people. Whatever you got to do. Maybe there's no even concept of marriage or anything. There's no procreation. Why? We're all here. All of us. But forever is a long time, as Prince said. We're Qs from Star Trek. And we get bored. And so we want a different way to exist. And we're brilliant. We're all knowing because everyone knows everything. No secrets. It's beautiful. But we realize that there's an interesting game that someone figured out. Serendipitously, perhaps. Intentionally, perhaps. Perhaps like the Borg, we all got together at one moment and went, yeah, let's do that. And we create this temporary vessel mechanism. Wasn't necessarily humans at first. Could have been some blobby thing that just kind of lives and dies. And we feel that. Don't really have a realm for it. Perhaps it is tested first in the dream realm. I always say the dream realm is the student films of the gods, right? But over the course of infinity, we come up with this reality, the one we're in right now. I think that if we were truly spirits, I think one of the beauties of being alive is the act of creation. And creation entails tremendous amounts of other disciplines, design, purpose. Some things have no purpose. They just look pretty. But that's a purpose. It looks pretty. Have you ever looked around the world and said, looks like everything's beautiful that's alive, like I said in many episodes? How do you think that happens? Because I think living beings, way outside of the human form, design them. Everything in this planet that's alive is gorgeous. The only thing that might look ugly is man's creation. But as everything that comes into existence typically follows, what usually happens in the invention of a particular solution that is the first time that solution has ever been invented. It usually starts off fairly primitive and advances as one generation or one effort, in this particular case, stands on the accomplishments of the previous effort. And then, of course, we, as the potential guests of this Westworld, we're definitely coming down into our own creation. We made Disneyland, and now we're coming down into it. Why do children die? Why do children suffer every once in a while? Because over time, we figured out that, well, one, no one's actually dying. You're just going through a situation. And that suffering is a completely different thing when viewed from the outside entities of souls. It is an emotion. It is a feeling. As much as you might dislike it, while you're in your human form, as soon as you pop out, you realize you got another slice of the Trivial Pursuit pie. You were a sports person once. Then you were a scientist. Then you're a celebrity. Whatever it is. One case you die young. One case you live to be one of the oldest people on planet Earth. But this world is forged. And I can't go to Adam and Eve just yet because we have to set the foundation. Let me ask you. If we had perhaps 100,000 Homo sapiens on this planet, being upgraded from the concepts learned from chimpanzees, apes, and hominids, they went back to the drawing board and simply created man, realizing that communication would probably be a major upgrade to the current form of yelping and screaming in the jungle. We have a re-articulated skull. We can pronounce syllables properly. This ups the game tremendously. Now, they're not gifting us with writing yet. They're not gifting us with iconic language or phonetic language of any kind. They're simply saying, just like Ringo Starr and Caveman, there's a little language starting to develop. Now, with language and this refined body, you no longer are in a feral state of being a creature, just simply going for the fundamentals of life, eating and screwing and sleeping, which is really what animals do. Now we can bring from our soul-based realm all of the art and invention, limited only by the form of humanity that we have created. Maybe we evolve here on Earth, just a tad. We certainly evolve when we procreate with other people that don't look like us. We create hybrids of amazing construction. But we're here now. And we brought with us the toolbox. And that toolbox is this sub-id, this non-emotional, functional sort of library of all the schematics of what we have constructed this world to be. But we don't want to keep making the trip back and forth in order to influence the design of our area exclusively. We'll still do it. But at some point, we don't want to fiddle with the simulation. If you ever play a multiplayer online game, you know that the designers don't go in and start designing the new level while you're playing the game, and all of a sudden, a molehill's a mountain and a mountain's a valley. It doesn't happen. They release expansion packs, and then you're introduced to the new world, typically, because they know you're sold on the old one. They don't want to change that too much, although World of Warcraft did that one time, sort of finishing their initial concepts, which is cool. But they let us have, I mean, we are them, they are us. We are all in this together. The toolbox is that as we desire to change this design, they build in this beautiful system. And the beautiful system says, well, we don't want to have one person rule the whole world. And as soon as they think that things should be different, then everyone else has to tolerate it. So they build in a consensus system, a consensus reality system driven from this sub-id. And we think things, and we talk about things, and we agree on things, and we philosophize, and we tell funny stories about gods and everything. Everything that we can conceive of, we communicate with, hence this show. And so very slowly over time, we start to architect the world while we're here. But now imagine there's only, again, 100,000 people here. Now, to the degree that we communicate, changes can occur much quicker because we are going to convince the 100,000 humans on this planet that things are actually a particular way and not another way. And then all of a sudden, who Who knows? I mean, we're all asleep because we're sleeping in the same region in the same time zone on Earth. Things start to change. Could even be that the Mandela effect is nothing more than this system, and that the internet hit a critical point in 2013 where the differences between our consensual realities simply average out. If there's more people who believe one thing, or it's communicated to you that more people believe something, then you're willing to relinquish your id subsystem to the other concept within their id subsystem, and the Berenstein Bears suddenly becomes the Berenstein Bears now. You simply capitulated to the change. But when you found out there was a Mandela effect, if you did have one, then you have to take into account that there was a moment of rejection of the Kubler-Ross effect. You weren't necessarily maybe angry, but you were definitely disoriented when you started hearing the contradiction to your own beliefs. But then, just like everybody, we went into a denial. Then we go into a negotiation process where we're like, well, how could that be? And da 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 da. And then you just kind of like you give up and you agree, you join them. Thus, the change becomes permanent in your reality. But you have fond memories of the other one. And we know that there's a group of people that will accept things a lot faster than others. So the less people that there are on Earth, this concept becomes much more malleable and much quicker and easier to change all reality. The more people that are born, well, the schematics are more like the consensus, and therefore you're having an epiphany to say, can't we just all get along? Can't we just figure out how to solve world hunger, power, all this kind of stuff? But too many people aren't thinking about that very issue, so their schematics got dust on it, and it's the old schematic. There was a huge transformation in this world history of thinking the world was flat to thinking it was round. It took hundreds of years to happen. But if you do your research, you will find out that people way before the formal individuals that were saying it was round, there were people hundreds of years ago, whole civilizations. Remember, the Egyptians definitely appear to have believed, the pre-dynastic Egyptians, which aren't Egyptian, probably. Their symbols for a year was a circle around the sun. Their symbol for a month was a circle around the moon. Well, somehow they figured that out. Maybe they're just the first descendants of this experiment, and thus they knew how they built the world. They knew how they built the sun. It was just an arbitrary system to create an ecosystem of life. And so it stuck. But then, as man was placed on this giant 24,000-mile-around ball, and they could no longer see the curvature of the original design, they fell into flat Earth, and thus the world was flat, perhaps for hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years, maybe tens of thousands of years, until someone just arbitrarily suggested it might be round. And so through presentation, through validation by the authorities, it starts to round off. But now, for those who don't believe it's round, truly don't believe it's round, and you could get together with flat Earth people, say in the village, then it becomes a city, then it becomes a state and a country. Just like the Twilight Zone, where the kid wishes everyone into the cornfield, where he had just that part of the Earth was the only thing existed in the entire universe, you could get your own little slice of reality. Now let's go back to Adam and Eve. So you have this Garden of Eden, and you would imagine that just like World of Warcraft, it originated in the 90s as Warcraft. It was a pretty limited world. It's a flat Earth for sure inside the computer. You can't just go forever in one direction like you can in World of Warcraft. They experiment first with a little playground, a sandbox. They're creating vegetation. And, you know, the way that the story might work is that all of that low-level life form, I don't mean to insult plants being probably the OGs of consciousness in this universe, but that goes first. It's a much more primitive system. They're coming up with chemistry and mathematics, all the principles of life. Then man gets placed in there, their ultimate creation. Maybe monkeys went first and hominids went second, then they finally just pull back. But it looks like we have that evidence here on earth as well, which is very interesting. But when the devil talks to Eve about the eating the apple, he says to her, God is hiding a bunch of things from you. And if you eat this apple, you will see all that is unseen. That could be a metaphor, and I'm stretching here a little bit, I know. But what if it's just a metaphor for understanding that you have the ability to change reality? Because boy, did it ever change their reality, didn't it? Stuff got more real. Pain, nakedness, all that stuff became a realization. Well, if man is peaceful and calm, war isn't a thing because everything's plentiful. No one has to take anything from anyone because there's plenty. Why would you? And if someone did take your stuff off your plate, you just reach over and get another plate. No big deal. You must have been more hungry than me, is what they think. What is the saying? The path to hell is paved with good intentions. But because ultimately we are a soul-based being, whether or not there's good and evil, maybe just a perspective of being in a human body or any other form of life. Because if you can't kill each other, if we can't kill each other in soul form, which seems plausible and obvious, I think, then there's no fear once you pop out. Nothing bad can happen to you. Nothing. Perhaps even hell is a construct of man. Because evil is a construct of man. Our perception of evil. Now, I think we do need to hang on to certain definitions of evil, because I don't think I personally want to live in a world made out of Hillary Clinton's. But now there's a more sinister thing I'm going to mention with this particular theory. Now, there'll be a handful of you that have seen the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? And of that handful, there'll be an additional group of you that saw the movie The Secret, and probably some that saw The Secret and didn't see What the Bleep Do We Know? Both movies are based on Manifest Destiny. The Secret went a little bit further in a interesting way, in that they said in the trailer of the movie that the elite of the world understand Manifest Destiny and use it to their advantage constantly. Well, we believe we are always the subject of something, and therefore we're waiting for someone to tell us it's okay to do what we already know we should be doing. Remember, there's plenty of people that can work their butts off at home as long as they're working for someone else. But the minute you suggest, hey, you should stop working overtime for your employer and getting no pay for it and develop your own business and do exactly what you do, but do it independently so you have some retirement and some control over your life, and they just cave. Oh, I can't do that. Why? Because no one told me to do it. Perception is everything. What the Bleep Do We Know is a quantum physics movie. It's a neural peptide movie. It is based on science, except the one lady who's a channeler. At least that's what her career says underneath her nameplate. It's like, why did you put her in that movie? Everyone else is a PhD professor. She might have a PhD too, but I don't know what it's in. And she might be a wonderful person. I'm just saying, it was a weird... I would expect a channeler to be in The Secret. But now, what if this little mechanism I'm talking about probably goes under a different name if it's real? But let's say the controlling forces of this world understand that this is the way it works. Perception is reality. And not just as a metaphor, but as a straight-up scientific, reality-based, matrix-based methodology of changing everything. There's a lot of things that these elitists are trying to tell our children to confuse them. A lot. They're trying to confuse us with science. They're trying to confuse our genders. They're trying to confuse everything. Well, there's a basic explanation for that. You want to get at the kids so they adopt your new paradigms of crazy, and therefore the world changes when the boomers die off, when Gen X dies off. Maybe the millennials too. They're trying to program the kids. Well, there's a mechanical version of that without any of this theory being true, of course. But what would be the forces to give people the perception that something is true? We talk about all the time between flat earth and round earth. We talk about matrix to not matrix. We talk about rocket engines working in the vacuum of space, pushing off of nothing, but having all this effect on the vehicle. Perception. Where did we get the perception that these things were, one way or the other. Media. Marshall McLuhan. If you don't know about Marshall McLuhan, you got to do a deep dive into his writings. If you want to just read a great article by Marshall McLuhan, I think it's 1968. He took an interview with Playboy magazine. It's a long article. It is a deep article. And you'll find out how deep that dude was. But he's the guy that coined the phrase media. And the number one thing he said was, it's more important that you understand the means by which you get information than the information itself. Now, without being able to channel his past soul, I'm sure that his second most important thing that you need to realize is the information itself. But why did he say the method of the information being transmitted to you is more important than the information itself? Seems sort of counterintuitive. Seems almost like the irrelevant has been put in front of the relevant. Well, with our mechanism, it has to do with absorption. If I walk up to you today and I said, hey, man, aliens just landed on Earth. And you're like, what? You know, if I really have integrity with you, you might go along with it for a little while. But even if I had really intense integrity with you, you're going to take a few steps back and, okay, how you feeling today? You got a fever or anything, you know? But if I brought up my telephone and I said, look, and I just bring out a telephone, I just recorded this, and all of a sudden, spaceships are landing on the beach down there and aliens are popping out and it's convincing. It's then all of a sudden, oh my God, he's telling me the truth. Could all be CG. Could be someone pulling, could be some CG artist that made this awesome scam. They passed it out to 1,000 people on planet Earth to pull this trick on people. And all of a sudden you believe it because it's visual. Maybe there's some sound involved. So what Marshall, I think, was getting to is if you were to read that in the newspaper, War of the Worlds, from 36 or 39, somewhere in there, Orson Welles got on the radio and said that the world was being invaded. And they also made all the provisions to make sure that no one was going to cut off the radio program. It was never going to go to a commercial. He just wanted it constantly, but what caused a huge panic because everyone at the time believed the radio was real. Today, that would never work. If the only information you got was from a radio station, you just go outside and go, man, I don't see anything. You put on YouTube and all of a sudden it's not there. So then that radio broadcast is not real. But you keep up in the game, it becomes real. You know, the one thing I forgot in my alien invasion episode was the onslaught of media that could make that real. Think about what's going on in America right now, where we've had a record-breaking president selection event where fraud is everywhere, man. I mean, unbelievable, right? And people are like, nope, not me. It's like Shaggy. Wasn't me. I mean, just think about the cognitive dissonance that's going on. Remember, what you train your brain to do is what it's good at. So all these people swallowing that pill, oh my God, they're going to be injured for life, let alone the little shot in their arm. But okay. So there's been a lot of propaganda around the weather, around the temperatures of Earth. It's so bad that geologists with degrees are buying this stuff left and right. Unbelievable. Running out of fresh water. I just still love that one. It just means you have no, I mean, like you need to take a meteorology course at least in college if you're going to buy that one. But let's say they wanted to create the perception that the sun's getting hotter and we're all going to burn up, or the sun's getting colder and we're all going to freeze to death. It's going through a cycle. It's going to last 1,000 years. So man's going to have to climb into holes, you know. But nobody believes that. Someone tells you that story, everyone's like, yeah, whatever, I got to pay my bills, and they just don't pay attention to it. But they turn on their media machine and they just start projecting this reality. Every place you go, they spend $1 trillion on road signs, on apps to follow it, and all the news media, which is complete crap, is publishing this. Scientific magazines are coming out. You can't go anywhere without a sign warning you about things. They tell the cities that are all co-opted by these scumbags to put up those road signs that, you know, usually say, accident ahead, move aside, buckle up, don't drink and drive, fireworks are illegal this year. And it just says, brace for impact, brace for, you know. even though it's only 100 degrees out, the signs say it's 140 out, and everyone just thinks it's 140, just because everywhere they go, they don't have a thermometer in their house. They get it from an app, they get it from a TV, they get it from their neighbor, they get it from that thermometer in your car, which is always 20 to 30 degrees hotter than it is. Then they go out and get all the pundits, all the Neil deGrasse Tysons and Bill Nye, the douchebag guy, and they run it on TV constantly. And automatically, they know they have the majority of the world in their back pocket because the majority of the world's asleep. So they're sucking this down like crazy. And they're redoing their schematic for the sub-id. So you don't believe it's true. But God damn it, it starts getting warmer for real. You live in the South Pole as a researcher, or you're in northern Russia, all the ice starts melting. Oceans start going up. Now the inconceivable, the scientifically impossible, without major, major changes to the world, is suddenly happening. They start to tell you the earthquakes are all about to happen. They're going to happen in the next week. And here in LA or in San Francisco, they all concentrate on it, and boom, we get the big ones. Two of them, separate ones. Mount St. Helens explodes again. Or Yellowstone Park explodes, right? That's the big one that we're all worried about. Chaos starts to ensue. Simply because they infected our minds with the perceptive reality / perceptive truth, perceived truth, I should say, which, just like, you know, pouring water down inside of a well, it goes all the way down to the deepest, darkest parts of your mind. And of course, I would assume that they would know how to say this in a particular way and augment it by, you know, visual confirmations. It just sinks right in, man. And everything changes. The thing is this isn't an all or nothing situation. And what I mean by that is it's not a situation where you have to convince the entire world of anything, because there's microfractures in this situation, micro changes that can occur that could send a particular population into a dire situation. Brazil and Venezuela were not in the state that they are in now, having endorsed socialism and a dictator, which is always the process, right? They were not bad off 20 years ago. But today, the murder rate is insane. Kids killing kids. I mean, teenagers killing teenagers. It's god-awful, horrible thing. If you live in America or study America, or you're just old enough to know the way America was, you look back on old television shows like George and Gracie or any of the shows, What's My Line, any of those old shows back in the day, radio shows, whatever, and Americans were nice people. You know, when you go to Asia and a lot of like Vietnam and Japan and Thailand or Taiwan or something like that, you bump into the most friendly people on planet Earth. There's a bunch of videos out there that are the cultural differences between Japan and America, and a lot of them, the kind of the don'ts that you're not supposed to do, or the do's that you're supposed to do, is based on courtesy and honor of old people versus young people. And America doesn't have it. It's like no one gives an F, right? Well, how did we get that way? And, you know, again, I understand there's plenty of sociology that can explain all this. But we now live in a really messed up America. Super messed up. Inconceivable things that are absolutely linked with the demise of mankind are being popularized, and we can't seem to kill it. But in the last 4 years in America, there's been a support mechanism here via the White House to bring back those old ways. And so it awakened the beast of people tolerating this media blitz on who we are as people. And so there's now going to be probably some form of major event in this country to take back the country and sort of regress us maybe 50, 60 years without all the prejudice, of course, hopefully, and the racism that we used to have. All the bad stuff can stay behind, but the good stuff that we had, being kind and courteous to each other, can move forward. Sort of the way we should have done it from the very beginning, but then again, you have to screw up sometimes before you figure out how to do it right. It was just a microscopic moment in time, when mankind here in America was really pretty well balanced, again, racism aside. So what does this mean to us on a daily basis, if this had any truth to it whatsoever? I'm going to assure you that the advice I'm going to give you to manage this sub-id is good advice no matter what, and probably stuff you already do. And we've been kind of echoing this theme throughout other episodes. Never before in history, and it's a double-edged sword, what I'm about to say, has it been important for you to think for yourself. What I'm not saying is that you have to contradict other people as a form of empirical behavior. Imperative behavior. We all know the contrarian. I'll probably make an episode on contrarians this season. We have to police the information coming inside of us. And we have to police it on this is really for America. I'm sure that Europe has definitely this is true as well. But we have to make sure that whoever tells us, quote unquote, who the enemy is, you can't listen. You got to make up your own mind whether or not someone's a bad guy or a good guy. You do. Ideas on how to run your life. We have to make sure that these are good ideas. But just like Dr. Solwell was talking about the Scottish in England, they advanced by copying the good things from the British. And then they excelled intellectually beyond the British because that was a thing they were focused on, getting intelligent, working on English instead of Celtic languages. And then immediately they found out, hey, we're not dumb. We just couldn't communicate with you, so you thought we were dumb. And here come the scientists, here come the writers, here come the scholars and the politicians and the poli-sci people. That's how they dug themselves out. That's a beautiful archetype for all mankind, especially on an individual level. In America, it is very dangerous to get old. Very dangerous to get old. It's dangerous for multiple reasons. The two most glaring reasons is that employment becomes damn near impossible due to age discrimination. That was forged into our reality because corporations don't want to pay high salaries for expertise. They'd rather have more errors with a young person at a quarter of the price than paying for the person who's going to have less errors. Culturally speaking, because America is about consumption, as you get older, if you don't wake up and simplify your life and your desires and what you think you need versus what you want, you do become lazy and fat. In America, you can almost unequivocally tell how old someone is by how heavy they are. Wasn't that way when I was a little kid? Go look at all those movies of post-World War II and the roaring 50s and whatever. The obesity was almost non-existent. Didn't matter how old you were. You couldn't tell anybody in my hometown was obese or old because they were obese. But the second thing that makes getting old dangerous in America is that youth of this world doesn't feel any connection with their parents. Like I don't have any real major connection with my parents. And it's very, very different from my connection with my mom, which is different than my connection with my dad. Now, my family sort of has a little philosophy that is, at least on the male side of the family, you don't burden your kids. You don't. Doesn't mean the kids can't help. It just means you're not going to call them up and say, I need to move in with you. It just doesn't happen. It's never happened. And I think maybe when my grandmother was suffering with dementia, she ended up living a little bit with my uncle, but it was for a very short period of time. And they put her in a really beautiful home just down the street. I mean, literally like 2 miles from my uncle. So it was good. That's what you get for living in a small town. A little bit more support system. And the old people hang out with the old people. But you get in a big city, you can just rot in a little apartment. You can rot in a room you got for rent. And the only thing that's going to happen is your landlord's going to find your dead body. It's sad. The big thing in Japan is that the elderly of Japan are highly respected and you treat them accordingly, you know, and we try to do that in America. But again, big city life, it's pretty rare. Depends on what neighborhood you live in. Where I live, it's all Midwestern standards, which is good. So if an older woman was trying to get into a department store and the doors weren't automatic, someone's going to rush up to help her out. If you go into Los Angeles, good luck. Now, the other thing, too, is I believe that if this were even true, And let's say that massive change is possible. Again, they could technically get everyone to believe the world is flat, and then it would go flat instantaneously. Well, once you get the majority of people to believe it. I know that sounds outrageous, and I'm only saying that as an example, but I don't think that they are disappointed with the way the world is perceived. I don't think they're disappointed with the class structure that they have taught us is the way the world works. People who, and I just, it was one of the listeners, I want to thank this person for sending me this video. Actually, you know, they posted on Facebook, on our Facebook page. It was a video of a guy, I don't even know who it was, but he was just kind of a radio podcasty thing with some pictures going by on YouTube. And the dude was like really angry at the beginning of the video, or very determined, I should say. And he said, you know, the most, he goes, well, the biggest screw up that we're making as mankind is believing that any other man on this planet has authority over us. He says, that's the biggest problem that we have on this planet. Well, that's a perceptive thing, isn't it? What do we talk about when we talk about children? Perception of your capabilities is everything. I watched the, the White Underbelly channel? It's like, forget the exact name, but it was like, it's the guy who does all the interviews with people on Skid Row. He's actually branched out and filmed some things that are really disturbing. He has a video up with an inbred family, I think in like North Carolina or something, and he goes to North Carolina. He never has left the studio, and all the videos I've ever seen, he's always interviewing prostitutes and pimps and drug addicts and all kinds of stuff. It's very educational. It's amazing. You really get a perception. And he interviews them for like half an hour to an hour. But a lot of these people will say, you know, I got into drugs because of this or that. And of course, their families are always broken somehow. But a lot of them will say that they, you know, like a prostitute will often tell a story where she is dominated by a quote unquote pimp who farms her out to guys, right? And he'll ask them, you know, well, what made you surrender yourself to this pimp when you can go down the street and get that kind of business all day long? And honestly, they don't talk about the territorial stuff anymore. Like it used to be that if you went down to a corner and started to try to trick, if a pimp said in his brain, I own that corner, you can't do it. You got to work for him or he's going to kill you. A lot of these prostitutes actually work independently because the internet, there's a lot more avenues for finding traffic. Those are typically slightly more sophisticated operations. But a lot of them are just simply saying, well, this person was the first person to tell me that I had any qualities whatsoever. And that's what these pimps do. I've been on the streets of New York and the streets of LA, and I've heard the pimps doing their spiel, man. They've always talking about how they got this spiel they do. And they say the same thing, just slightly evolved from the previous attempt. And it's their game. They run the game on the girl. And they just, man, they know everything these girls can possibly say back. And they have the perfect thing to say to infect their brains with, like, you're more secure with me. I'm going to take everything from you, your money, that you won't want for anything. You'll have nice dresses. You'll be protected. Anyone messes with you, they mess with me. I got old blah, blah, blah. And it's interesting. There was one I watched last night, which was also sort of massively disturbing, where this woman was a survivor of incest. And it was that her grandfather was this complete pedo, had raped his daughter. For a little while there, she thought she might be his daughter. And turns out that he'd had his tubes tied before he started raping her mother. But they asked, because when they asked her, like, when did this start? She said 14 years old, first time it ever happened. And it was sort of infrequent, but she went off and she said that her big problem was that she was this big rebel, which is very interesting. That whole thing, you can't tell me what to do. Man, that is the recipe for screwing up your life to the infinite degree. But she said that he would always tell her that she was a lady after doing what he did. Don't forget, you're a lady. And he would gift her things and sort of be like that boyfriend or that husband that she could never find in real life. And so even though she hated it, she said there was this sick, weird thing that he was giving me something I wasn't finding anywhere else. I should tell you that parenting is a very simple job that you just got to do. And the number one thing you can do is give your kids accolades. Tell them they can be anything that they want to be. Ask them what they want to be. Just the question of what do you want to be when you grow up? That is not just a little game. That is forging a higher level of success and perception of the future with goals in your child. So the reason why I mention this is this system could work in a microcosm as well. It's not just psychology. Psychology is a medium by which you get to that sub-id, and then one concedes, one agrees on perception of reality, and thus here goes. People who are alcoholics or drug addicts who get out of the addiction, a lot of times they get out of addiction through religion. Very common thing. The ultra strong can get out without religion because they've simply self-perceived this reality of them being on drugs as being the worst thing on ever. They're taking inventory every time they wake up hungover or when they go through withdrawals, and they own their mind and they manhandle themselves out of it. Now, it's no criticism of the other way. If you can get out of it, you do whatever you need to do. Blow up balloons if that helps you. But what does religion do? Religion flat out tells you what's good and what's bad. Any religion. This is against the rules. And if you believe in a hell, boy, it's really motivating if you can truly perceive of that. So religion, what is religion? Religion is a schematic that you can adopt and drop straight into your programming, down to that sub-id, adopt it, and it becomes real. Now, I've talked at length in 500 episodes here and there about the fact that there seems to be, this is what I alluded to in Colliding Realities, although I hadn't, this concept was not on my mind at all when I did that episode, but that we can show people evidence of scientific conflicts for that day in September. And no matter how much you can prove to them on paper that the science doesn't support the assertion, they need to believe all these people died the way that they died. You could have a shooting that happens, and it may be one of those ones where maybe nobody was really hurt, but they want those people to be dead because that way they don't have to get down into that system because whatever, for whatever reason, they have a warm fuzzy with the massacre story and not a warm fuzzy with an alternative where no one got killed. I have, you know, been around the United States as a kid, obviously as an adult, traveled the world just a tad. And what's interesting is, and something I think about as I get older, is the subtleties of our behavioral differences between human beings, especially men to men. And if you've ever experienced this, you'll know what I'm talking about. I'm pretty sure most of you have had it, whether or not you consciously realized it or not. This might be a fun exercise if this is the first time you've heard of this, but it applies to this theory. You'll see people interact with other people, and sometimes you see someone that sort of behaves like there's a suspicious behavior to them, in that they're treating you like you're suspicious. They're fine, but they treat you like, I don't know, you just said that thing, and I don't know if I believe you, and whatever, man, you know, I'll find out later if I believe that's real. And when I was younger, especially, I found that behavior really annoying, like, and it's because I tell the truth, and so if I'm bringing information to you, to the best of my ability, it is the truth, right? Yeah, I could be full of shit sometimes, but whatever. But they have obviously run into or were raised inside of a deceptive envelope of reality. They have potentially experienced tons of people lying to them. And so in order to police the information coming inside their mind, they're suspicious. Now, are there more tactful ways to be suspicious? Probably. There's probably ways to go, oh yeah, really? Wow, that's cool. Yeah, inside your brain you're going, no way, whatever. But you keep the other person comfortable. Nothing else, you milk them for everything that they think is one way or the other. It gives you more fodder to go and evaluate things later. I like to get everything out of everybody. If someone's telling me a theory I don't believe, in the past, I would have stomped in there, no way, this, when I was younger. And now as I get older, I just sit there and go, oh, really? Wow, that's cool. Well, tell me more about this, more about that. I just dig and dig and dig, and they can leave the room after a 2-hour conversation not realizing that I haven't said a word, really. I've just been a reflection session. I think I recently said this, but I'm going to say it again. That old saying, if it seems too good to be, it probably is. Now, that is one that's dealing with a notion of fortune. If someone's promising you a free sandwich, or I keep saying sandwich, it's free lunch, right? Free lunch is probably not free. There's some other thing to it. I've seen this and experienced this in my life countless times, more times than I'd like to admit. All right. Well, we look at our existence, and it seems like most of the definitions of reality immediately lead to infinity. How big is space? Infinite. How long have we been here? Forever. All those little sayings seem to be, it's like it's counterintuitive to our inner core. Because perhaps as our consciousness, our human consciousness, hears that subject matter, we definitely try to solve for it in our minds, right? Someone says, well, space is infinite. And then sometimes you just go, okay, whatever. I'll take a number two, spicy. Or you sort of send a query, almost like maybe a math problem out to your soul, who then hands it off to the universe. I think sometimes it comes back and says, not really, but don't worry about it, doesn't matter. And so we're left with an uneasiness that's kind of like, really, you know, infinity can't exist because infinity means that it's growing constantly. If the universe was infinite, it'd have to be an is of infiniteness, which means if there's any border, the border's continuing to grow, or just is infinite out there. It makes no sense, does it? If you're in a matrix that's dictated by sub-id schematics, well, that could be the perception that we have because we haven't completed the simulation. Why are there stars in the sky? Maybe it's just for decoration. Maybe it's to beckon man to try to travel in the stars. Maybe there's a hidden code in it. Don't get me started. Thinking for yourself is not a contradictory exercise. I want to say that twice. It just means that you're going to need perhaps a little more data than was shared with you initially about a particular concept for you to completely digest it. And part of it has to do with that alarm system that goes off, like my last example, which is someone's telling you something, and for some reason, you have a hesitation. It's because perhaps you looked it up in the universe's mega database up there in the real cloud, and it's coming back, no, but I'm not going to send back in the query the solution, because you don't deserve to know everything just because you asked a question about it. That'll impact the simulation, and thus everyone would know everything the second they asked a question about it in their mind. There's a limit. Don't want to mess up everything. This is, no matter how you slice it, a limited form of existence. It is. If you think about your soul continuing to live forever, which is a little bit easier to digest than space being forever, then this reality is okay. And every reality is okay. Anyway, I wanted to share that with you guys because it was fairly interesting to me. And just thinking, I mean, the way I think about it is you take pre-dynastic Egypt, very small population initially, and they're able to do things. Why are they able to build the pyramids? Because they perceived the capability to do so. They weren't told no first. They were told, why not? They had an idea to do something that was perhaps never done before. And so whatever mechanisms they used to do it, they were just available. Limestones didn't weigh 2.5 tons apiece at the smallest possible stone. But you can factor this schematic system into everything. How tall are we? How smart are we? How long do we live? Imagine man being fairly immortal until man perceives death. And then through maybe fear or curiosity, we manifest mortality. It can go in all dimensions of all things. And that for me is really interesting. Not sure you can make a movie out of this, but it seems like there's a little thread there for a book. Anyway, let me know what you think in the comments. And if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go and just bookmark it. It's got everything up there you need. Make sure and like and subscribe if you dig it. Our subscriptions and views are off the chain, man. I mean, we're really getting super busy. So to all the newcomers, thank you for joining. Hopefully we can keep you entertained. These are the episodes that checker in between the more commercial topic episodes. I think it's always good for you to reach out inside your brain and push it in areas that you never before perhaps have conceived of. But anyway, until the next episode, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.